Lakes Region. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is the Socrates Exchange. In his 1886 novel Crime and Punishment, Fyodor Dostoevsky portrayed the character of Raskolnikov, a Russian former student who commits what he thinks is the perfect crime of murdering a pawnbroker. Raskolnikov feels himself superior, a superman, which he thinks gives him the right to commit such a horrible act. But over time, anguish, guilt, and his conscience get to him, and Raskolnikov learns that he isn't the superman he thought he was. He turns himself in and is sentenced to hard labor. In his novel, Dostoevsky brings up that question that many of us have asked, if some people are better than others in some way, shape, or form. Are we all equal, or should we be? It's easy to say yes to such a question. After all, our own Declaration of Independence clearly states that all men are created equal. And yet, we are constantly making judgments of people. For example, we feel that adults over age 21 make better decisions about drinking alcohol. And in hiring, we choose the best person for the job. Over the years, many have debated whether we are all born good or bad or given a clean slate. That if we are born of different skin colors and blood types, could some of us then also be born better than others? If certain people seem to lead better lives, like the rich or those born into powerful families, does the fact that they are born better make them better? And how do we define better? If it comes from being good, then is Mother Teresa a better person than Hitler? These are the questions we're exploring today on the Socrates Exchange. Can one person be better than another? Our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. The Socrates Exchange is funded in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. Today, we're live in our Studio D before an audience, including members from Concord High School. And our philosopher is Max Latona. He's an associate professor of philosophy at St. Anselm College. And welcome back, Max. It's really nice to see you.
It's great to be back, Laura. Thank you.
Well, lay out for us, please, Max, just some of the central questions that come up as we look at this question of can one person be better than another?
Well, I think you nailed it already with your questions. But let me add to it. I think all of us know that people are better than others at certain tasks or skills that we perform in our everyday lives. So my younger sister, for instance, is much better at art than I am. And I might be better at shoveling the driveway than my wife, but she's much better at finances and so on. But the question we're interested in asking here, I think, is whether we can be better at being human, whether there are better persons or perhaps are all people equal. So let's suppose, for instance, that we say that, yes, it is better. People can be better persons or human beings. Well, then the next question might be, well, what's your criteria? What is the standard by which you're judging one person to be better than another? And is that an objective standard or a subjective standard? And then we can go on from there. So what kind of criteria are we going to use to judge people as being better or worse or perhaps even as equal?
All right, and let's get our listeners and audience involved. Again, the number on the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And Max, I just want to remind everyone that this is a little different from a regular exchange program. Your role is not to answer the question, it's to pick at it, to explore it through the Socratic method of asking more questions. So when you call in or when you come up to the microphone here in Studio D, stay with us for a while and we'll have a dialogue about this. We already have one person up at the microphone. Good morning. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me. My name is Taylor York and I'm from Concord High. To me, it seems like it depends on what you mean by better because, I mean, in the beginning, nature kind of determined that the better of the species would survive due to natural selection. But nowadays, it seems like we determine what's better. So, as in sports, we determine that you're a better player if you score more goals or anything like better defense and stuff like that. So, I think we can be better than someone else.
Okay, and when you say that, you're using a natural standard or a social standard?
Well, the first part was a natural
standard,
and then the second part was social. So socially, we do have standards that determine who's better than another person. But in natural selection's case, that would be a natural thing.
Okay. So would you say that's an objective standard or something that we all agree on as a society, or we all have different standards?
I would say We all have different standards, but we do have some objective standards, like it comes to sports and physical activities.
Right. But, okay, so, Taylor, that's good. Now my question to you would be, is this better and worse in terms of our being human or in terms of certain activities that we might engage in? And the reason I ask you that is because as democratic persons, we tend to be egalitarian and think everybody is fundamentally equal. So how would you square your claim that our society tends to think people are better and worse with the claim that we also think people are equal?
That's an interesting point. I would think that although we do think people are equal, it's a little hard that we do have a standard for also people who are better,
yeah,
that like money-wise and looks and everything. And then we do have the standard for lower-class people, poor and stuff like that. So I don't think we'd exactly be all treated as equal.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And thank you for coming to the microphone and for being the first one. Again, we have an audience here of members from the public in Concord High School. You can join us by phone, too, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This month on the Socrates Exchange, we're pondering the question, can one person be better than another? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. And another person joins us at the microphone. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm Jack Kirsch from Concord High School. And to answer the question very bluntly, I would say no. One person cannot be better than another. If you look at the birth of two identical twins, a father and a mother can't sit there and say, I want that one because that one's better. Hmm. We can't. What we determine as better is a culturally acceptable standard. When John Wilkes Booth and Gandhi, they can't be compared as one is better than the other. One made choices that the human race sees as beneficial, and one made choices that weren't. But I don't see that one is innately better than the other.
Hmm. Okay, good, Jack. So all of the saints and heroes that we revere throughout history are no better as persons than the worst criminals or dictators who've performed violent actions on other human beings.
It does seem controversial, but even at...
So, well, let me follow up, mm-hmm, here. So that would suggest then that there really is no better and worse in terms of our actions that we perform. Is that right? So that's all. It's all a matter of perspective, or it's
it is. Yeah. I believe that good and evil are based on relatively on human perception. What we see as good is what the population on a whole feels is beneficial towards the evolution of the human race. But what's bad is, you know, some would say that in Hitler's mind he was doing the right thing. And can it be bad if he feels that he's doing the right thing?
Well, what do you think?
What do I think?
Or what do the 6 million victims of the Holocaust think?
It's true. Yeah. As I was saying, it's a very relative thing. Bad is, in the eyes of all the people who are killed, I'm sure it was bad. But at his core, I do not think he was any better than anyone sitting in this room.
I have a question for you, Jack, and I appreciate you again coming out and standing up. I wonder if one person can be born better than another. You know, are we all born with a capacity for better, for good, for evil? Or how much do circumstances play a role? I mean, Hitler didn't have a bad life to turn him bad. Mother Teresa suffered a lot in her life. So are we born better or not?
That kind of comes down to the point of original sin. And I don't think that basically a non-conscious, because they don't really have conscious thought babies, one is better than the other and one is worse. I don't think you could say that this baby is going to turn out to be a mass murderer. So what turns someone good and evil is, I don't know, probably all in their minds.
Well, one follow-up. Just, mm-hmm. Okay, so if it's all a matter of perspective and there's no good and evil, objectively speaking, then it seems to me that that undermines our whole legal system, right? I mean, when we put somebody up on trial for a horrible crime, what you're saying really is, in effect, it's just the majority's opinion imposing its view on this one individual, but there's really no justice or right in what they're doing in punishing this person.
Well, again, the legal system is a construct of human perception.
Wow.
If we, in the wild, those who are dominant, those who kill, are the greatest of the species.
Okay, I'll just one final response, and that is when my students argue this perspective in my ethics class, which is relativism, of course, and there's no right or wrong in what we do, then the first thing I do is give them an F on their exam, no matter how well they performed on it. And when they complain that it's unjust and they're outraged, I say, but wait a minute, you told me just a week ago that there is no right and wrong, no justice and injustice. It's all a matter of perspective. And it's my perspective that you just as well deserve an F as deserve an A.
It's very true from the point that they and I am arguing, that is true. There is no good and evil, so there can be no justice.
Okay, well, just one thing I'd want you to reflect on is during your everyday life, when people perform actions that are unjust towards you, is that the standpoint that you would adopt?
I adopt what I think so I can be seen as a good person, because I believe that there is good and evil, but it's not... No. Wait. Good and evil... It, as I said, it's relative. So the people around me, the upwards of 6 billion now, do see good and evil. But at the core, there is no good and evil.
All right.
Thanks, Jack, thank you for coming to the microphone. And Taylor, thank you to you for coming up earlier. I invite all the members of our live audience here in Studio D to join us. And join us by phone, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think about this question? Can one person be better than another? Just as we're born with certain physical characteristics, could we also be born better than others or not? And what's the difference between better and equal? How do we define better? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And Max Zatona, we'll go to the break by sharing a couple postings on our website, the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org. Here's Jay, who says, all men and women, for that matter, are created equal. They simply don't remain equal throughout life. And there is nothing in the Declaration or the U.S. Constitution that should lead anyone to believe this is or should be the case. Jay says we are guaranteed equal access, not equal outcomes. More of your questions and thoughts after a short break. Stay with us for the Socrates Exchange.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Altus Investment Group in Concord, one office managing $40 million of nest eggs for baby boomers in central New Hampshire, altusinvest.com. And shared gifts presenting For the Love of Animals, a day of fun and education for kids of all ages, February 6th from 1 to 4:30 at Hopkinton High School. Details at shared-gifts.org. More of the Socrates Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny, with highs today from mid to upper 20s. Partly cloudy tonight, lows ranging from 5 below in the north to around 10 above in the south. Tomorrow, cloudy, some snow likely, mainly in the afternoon. Accumulations from 1 to 3 inches likely for most of the state. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today it's our Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of asking more questions. This month that question is, can one person be better than another? And remember, we're not out to necessarily answer this question, but to examine it. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. What do you think about this question? Can one person be better than another? If one person can be better, how does that carry over into other areas of our life? What is society's role in determining if one person is better than another, if there should be any role at all? And if we're all born with genes that determine how tall we'll be or what our skin color is, can we also be born better? We'd love your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. We also have a live audience with us here in Studio D, and we'll go back to that audience now. And good morning, sir. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Bob Pingree, retired Concord High School teacher. I would have been teaching many of you 6-7 years ago. And perhaps when I was your age, I might have taken the viewpoint espoused by our first two speakers, but I certainly don't any longer. I think better is the comparative form of good. So I think we have to say, what do we mean by good? And I think we really mean something moral, not a question of, you know, I can run faster than you or something like that, or I have more money, or I'm more handsome than anyone else in this room. So good equals virtuous, I guess, you know, and I think some people are undoubtedly more virtuous than others. Some people are kind and loving and generous, and other people are mean and spiteful and vengeful. Scrooge was a better person after the spirits visited him than he was before. Dickens would maintain he is, and there's a change, you know. The woman mentioned in the Monitor this week who put a naked child out in a snowbank. I'm better than she is. I've never done that. You know, I think my single most important criteria is Blanche DuBois in A Streetcar Named Desire. Deliberate cruelty is what separates good people from bad people.
Right.
So Nazis who reintroduced malaria into the Pontine Marshes in 1943, leading to the deaths of 100,000 Italians, and before doing that, confiscated all the quinine supplies so nobody could get healed. Yeah, they weren't good.
Right.
I am better than them.
Boy, that's pretty persuasive, Bob. I like it myself. But now let me ask you some questions. Okay, so would you say this is something we pick up as we grow up, these qualities of better and worse, or do we have some of them by nature? Well, let me give you three possibilities. Okay. So it could be by nature. It could be by through our own actions that we develop these qualities in life, or it could be our environment that turns us into one or the other.
I don't believe in original sin.
Okay.
No. I would tend more to be a Pelagian and hope that we're born with seeds of goodness.
All right. All of us equally.
Yes.
Okay.
But some people become worse than others. Some people are corrupted by power. Hitler.
Right.
But there have been countless chancellors of Germany before and since Hitler who were not corrupted in the same way.
Right.
You know, Angela Merkel is better than Hitler,
yeah,
and a better chancellor probably as well as a person, although we won't talk about the internal governance of things. I don't know why some people become worse. If I did, then I'd be sitting in the philosopher's chair.
Well. So what about free will? I mean, do you think people are free and they freely choose what actions
Absolutely.
They engage in?
I tend to be existential about things. I think we always make our own choices all the time. And
okay, let me try this one now. Are you a parent by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. So have you noticed with your own children or perhaps with children that of people that you might know that some of them are more naturally inclined to, say, be generous or to be courageous or to be self-controlled or, you know, any of the virtues that some of them, and then for others, it's a bit more of a struggle in one of the virtues or another.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that would seem to suggest to me that there is something like a natural inclination to virtue that some of us might have and some people might not have, which suggests that maybe there is a little bit of better and worse in the way we're born.
Well, and there may, in fact, be a natural inclination to vice in some people,
I
know.
Yeah. Okay. One more question. So, if you've ever, let's imagine we have a parent with multiple children, some of whom other people regard as pretty rotten and other of whom people regard as pretty good. And you ask the parent if they agree with those judgments, more often than not, I think the parent's going to say no. Mm-hmm. All of my children I love, they're all good equally. And my little Johnny has done some bad things. I know he's in prison now, but he's still a good person. And I'm wondering now, is that parent blinded? Or do they see something that the other people don't see by virtue of their love?
I think the parent can say, I love them all, and may in fact try to say, I want to do a better job at loving the one who's regarded as bad than I'm doing, hoping that that will have a beneficial influence.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
But I think sometimes the parent is blinding him or herself to the genuine
evil
defects in character of the child.
All right.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob, thank you very much. Real interesting. And, you know, one aspect of this discussion that many Americans latch onto is the language in our own Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. This keeps coming up, Max. Words that have been repeated by our leaders over the centuries. For more on that concept and how it ties into can one person be better than another, our executive producer, Keith Shields, spoke with Jordan Budd. He's a professor at the UNH School of Law, specializing in constitutional law.
The famous line in the Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal, it's unclear what exactly the purpose of that line was at the time of its inclusion. We know that the document more generally was designed to declare independence from England. And then as time progressed and the revolution got underway, the Declaration of Independence itself as a document became largely irrelevant. There was very little reference to it, very little thought about it. The act of declaring independence was significant, not the actual text that got the job done. And the Declaration only became relevant again 20, 30 years later when, as a matter of political argument, various proponents of abolition particularly looked back to the Declaration of Independence in that particular language and began to seize on it as one argument that they could advance for why the country should repudiate the institution of slavery. The founders clearly did not understand equality to mean anything remotely approximating what we take it to mean today. When they talked about equality, at best they meant among white men, predominantly landed white men, who were the only ones who could exercise the vote. But it's really important to remember that the Constitution, the binding document that truly structured our government and distributed rights and responsibilities, was absolutely silent as to equality. The only rights that are distributed in the original document that even touch on the equality interest are a constitutional right of slave owners to recover escaped slaves. And it wasn't until we fought the Civil War and Lincoln employed the Declaration of Independence as rhetorical support for the larger effort against slavery that we began to consider formally inserting the equality principle into the Constitution itself. We're almost 100 years into the country before equality has a formal place at the table. The question has always been not whether everyone will be treated identically. The equality principle in the Constitution has never been understood to require that. The question is, when is it permissible for government to treat people differently? When is discrimination okay? And the Equal Protection Clause generally is understood to prohibit arbitrary discrimination. Not all discrimination, but arbitrary discrimination or irrational discrimination. But our understanding as a society of what is rational or irrational obviously has changed substantially over time as well. It was understood at the time of the 14th Amendment that while the institution of slavery was to be abolished, that separate but equal education, separate but equal train cars, was perfectly consistent with the equality principle. It took 100 years for us to repudiate that understanding of equality and reconceptualize it more broadly. But there was no understanding of equality between men and women at the time of the 14th Amendment's enactment. There was certainly no understanding of equality based on sexual orientation or any of the other kinds of fault lines that are really the focus of the debate today. So as we move forward as a society, we revisit constantly what is rational and what's irrational as a basis for government conduct. I suppose that this ultimate question of whether a person can be better than another isn't a question that the Constitution addresses. I don't think that that's what the Declaration of Independence was attempting to address either. They're addressing a much more modest question, which is, when can government recognize differences? They're, I suppose, related to the extent that we posit people who are over the age of 18 are better citizens or better capable of participating in democracy than those under 18 because we allow those over 18 to vote and those under 18 cannot. And there's a normative judgment being made there about the aptitude of a class of people. And in that respect, it touches on the judiciary's assessment about whether government's distinction that's being drawn there, giving the franchise to those 18 years of age or older, is arbitrary or not. That there's some validity to that larger normative judgment being made that kids aren't going to be as good at citizenship as adults. So there's a connection between the two, but it's not in any way squarely before the courts when they're asked to enforce the equality principle. And that's probably a good thing, because it's not clear at all to most folks that the judges are the people who should be making these ultimate philosophical judgments on behalf of society.
That conversation with Jordan Budge of the UNH School of Law was produced by Exchange Executive Producer Keith Shields. Our number for you to join us on the Socrates Exchange today is 1-800-892-6477. What do you think of this question? Can one person be better than another? Just as we're born with certain physical characteristics, could we also be born better than others? What's the difference between better and equal? And how do we define better, by our talents or by our morality? Again, let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. And I invite members of our studio audience here in Studio D to come to the microphone as well. Max Latona is my co-host this hour. Max, let's go to the phones now. Scott is waiting in Dover. Hi, Scott. You're on the Socrates Exchange.
Thank you for including me. This was a wonderful conversation. The point I'd like to make is I do not think one person is better than another. For me, it's more of looking at the difference between who people are and what people do. So, for example, you take two hammers and use one to build a house and one to smash a car window. To talk about one hammer being better than the other sort of misses the point. It's really about what we've called that hammer in to do. If we view people as the problem rather than as resources to fix problems, I think that's when we run into trouble, and that's how we justify war, violence, religious intolerance, et cetera. But if we view people as resources, then we use those people to address problems such as war, violence, and religious intolerance. Let me just give one example. I think about the distinction between fighting terrorists and fighting terrorism. If we view people as the problem, then what we do is we fight terrorists, and you do that by killing the person who is creating terror. If instead we view people as resources to solve problems, not viewing one person as better or worse than another, then when we fight terrorism, we address the underlying issues that cause someone to act out in violent ways, creating terror for other people. Very different solutions. You kill terrorists, you end up creating more terrorists. You fight terrorism, and you help people work together to solve some of the world's greatest problems.
Hmm. Oh, Scott, thank you for your thoughts here. They're interesting. Let's go back to the hammer for a moment. So, yeah, I agree with you that you could use a good hammer for all sorts of purposes, some of them good and productive and others bad and unproductive. But what if the hammer you're using, instead of doing what its function and doing it well, instead of that, let's suppose every time you banged on something, it sent shooting pains up your arm, or the head of it fell off and hit you in the forehead or something along those lines. At some point, you're going to say, this is a rotten hammer, and throw it out, right? That is to say, you're going to make a judgment quality about the hammer and perhaps replace it with a new one. And let me just keep going here. So by the same token, people can use, for instance, their generosity for all sorts of purposes. You can use it for all sorts of good things, but I suppose you can use it badly, too, if I'm a generous drug dealer and I'm giving out free samples to people in my neighborhood. But you can also be stingy, that is to say, fail to have that quality of generosity and perhaps be selfish and ignore other people's needs when you can help them. In other words, yeah, I understand we can use good qualities and strengths and skills for all sorts of purposes, some of them bad, but we can also lack those good qualities and have the opposite. And that seems to me to be what people identify as making us bad, if anything. Not our using
right.
good qualities necessarily for the wrong reason, but lacking those good qualities altogether. What do you think about that?
I guess what I would wonder is it that we lack those good qualities, or is it that we choose not to focus our resources in that direction? I guess I'm not sold on the idea that those qualities are completely absent.
Hmm.
I would think that we all have the potential to do that, and the question is, how do we go about making those decisions? I think there's some basic ways that we view people that we can change a question based on whether we think people are better or worse. So I think about people like Howard Gardner and Robert Sternberg when they're talking about forms of intelligence.
Right.
One of the ways that they change the question is instead of saying, are you smart or are you smarter than someone else, they would change the question to, in what ways are you smart? And by doing that, it's no longer sort of comparing people who's better or worse than the other. They're saying, what are your particular strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah.
What could you do better? What do you need to work on? It's like the area of disabilities, where we say, well, here's someone who's disabled. Well, to me, disabled means broken, as if that person has no talents or abilities.
Right.
But we all have abilities and disabilities. I cannot throw a knuckleball or perform brain surgery, well, at least with the person living afterwards. Suppose I could perform it. And so we all have abilities and disabilities, and the question is, what are our strengths and weaknesses?
Good.
And I think that puts us all in an equal playing field.
Right.
Well, Scott, it's great for you to join us in the Socrates Exchange. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Max, let's go back to our studio audience. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi, my name's Libby Green. I'm from Concord High as well. I'd like to return to the first thing that Laura said at the very beginning of this program about Raskolnikov and how, within his own mind, he was able to justify that he was, in fact, the superhuman and the Superman. I think that that's true because Raskolnikov's actions were being made entirely to benefit him. I think that within our own minds, because everything that we do is made for the most part to benefit ourselves, we can each justify ourselves as the best person. I think, and that's just kind of following up on how to establish the grounds for determining whether one person is better than another. We think that we're better than everyone else because everyone else is serving their own interests.
Hmm. Oh, that's an interesting thought. It's Livy, is that right?
Yes.
So you're making a claim that all people tend to think of themselves as better than others. I'm not sure that's true, Livy. I know in my own life there have been moments when I've been ashamed of myself and I think to myself, what a rotten person I am. And I think, I wish I could be like that person. Or that person.
But why did you think of yourself as a rotten person at that point?
Well, this is something I must have done.
But was it something that you did to yourself or something that you did to someone else?
What? Now she's turning
the
table.
The tables have turned.
It could be either. It could be either. In other words, I'm saying that maybe when you're young, you tend to have this sort of unlimited faith in yourself as a person and your goodness. When you get older, you realize you're flawed as a human being. And you're not quite as perfect as you'd like to be.
Okay, and Livy, I'm going to interrupt you there, but stay there because we'll get back into this after a very short break. Okay, so stay there, and Max, stay there, and if you're on the line, stay there as well. This is the Socrates Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
More than 400 venues honor the NHPR member card with special discounts. Museums, theaters, restaurants, and lodgings. You're bound to find something you like in the directory that comes with the card, like February's benefit of the month, which entitles you to 2 tickets for the price of 1 per any production at the Peacock Players in Nashua. They're doing Thornton Wilder's Our Town later this month. For more information about our member card or to get one for yourself if you don't already have one, visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from IamCollegeBound.org, providing resources to inspire New Hampshire high school students to pursue higher education. Information online at IamCollegeBound.org. And Rhymes Propane and Oil, proud to offer renewable bioheat and environmentally responsible heating oil to their customers in the Keene area. Online at rymes.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, with a bill in the legislature to repeal the state's Rail Transit Authority, we'll explore the future of high-speed rail in the Granite State. Email us your questions and thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us Monday morning live at 9. Today, it's the Socrates Exchange, and this month we're pondering the question, can one person be better than another? Let's get your thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. We also have an audience with us live here in Studio D. My co-host for the hour is Max Latona from St. Anselm College. And Max, just before the break, you and Libby from Concord High School were getting Socratic. Let's continue that discussion. And Max, go ahead.
Well, I guess the ball is in Libby's court here. So the question was, are there times in your life that you have felt lesser as a person in some way or other as a result of your actions or something that happened?
Entirely, but I think that the times in my life when I've felt worst were the times that I felt like I was betraying myself in some way. Okay. So perhaps even in my actions toward another person, I was betraying some part of my character. And it isn't necessarily that how I made the other person feel or how I affected their life is what made me feel bad. It's that I felt like I was perhaps betraying something that I knew was true about myself, like my generosity or my kindness or what
have
you.
Okay, well, let's go back to your other thought, which was that all people are self-interested. I think that's what you implied, right? That's the reason why everybody tends to think of themselves as better than others.
I think that self-interest is... It exists, but I don't think that it should be the basis of any discussion because it seems kind of circular to me. Like, you have to build on it. It's like moral relativity. Like,
okay,
it exists, but where do you go from there?
Okay, so you're not making the claim that everybody is self-interested.
I think that everyone's self-interested, but I think that there's more to it than that.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Libby, this gets to a question that we asked in another Socrates exchange. What was the question exactly, Max? Is it always good to do the right thing?
Oh, I can't remember, Laura.
Something like that. Well, Raskolnikov, who we've been talking about from Crime and Punishment, he killed someone to get the money, but then he wanted to do good things with it. So the question was, you know, Is it ever right to do what is wrong?
Right.
I was at the hype day, and we had a pretty heated discussion about this. So I think the conclusion that we came to at that point, conclusion I mean in the vaguest terms, is that it's never right to do wrong, but it's...
Well, we'll save that one for another day.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Today, that's great. Thanks for coming up to the microphone, Olivia. I appreciate it. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Can one person be better than another? That's what we're pondering today in the Socrates Exchange. And we have another member of our audience with us. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. My name's Christopher John. I've been listening to NPR for a while from Winchester, New Hampshire. Can a person be better or worse? I guess I don't know. These students are certainly better at leading the conversation than I would have been at this point or that point in my life. Are we born better? Are we born worse? Are we talking about morality, socioeconomic statuses? I mean, we tried to set this out at the beginning of the program. You know, what measure are we using here? I guess that's my question to the program.
Okay. So what's your answer?
I certainly don't know. That's why I'm here
listening. What about Bob's claim earlier that morality, virtue, is more fundamental to who we are than any of these skills
or
talents?
Think that we've talked about that to a certain degree, whose morality and whose standpoints. I certainly think that I make better moral decisions than my brother. Huh. But
I hope he's not listening.
No, I'm certain that he's not. But I certainly know that I've not always made the best moral decisions that I could have made. I know that I've made horrendous decisions in my life that have negatively affected others. So does that make me a better person or worse person?
No, fair enough.
I've learned more, so that makes me better. But it was worse to perform those actions in the first place. So.
Right. Fair enough. And there's a honest humility there. But at the same time, I think you'd want to be able to make certain moral judgments, and we read the newspaper and we're horrified at what somebody did and say, what a horrible human being, or we read about Hitler in history or other Pol Pot or many other horrible people. We want to be able to make judgments about that. Otherwise, we end up in this sort of spiral of relativism that was a Jack, I think, was articulating so well earlier.
Well, I guess we certainly don't want to end up in a moral void where everybody's just running around making their own decisions for their own personal gain or loss.
Let me ask you, let me turn it around. Is there something like human dignity, you think? And is it something that we all share in equally, regardless of our actions?
Well, I would certainly like to believe in it, but I think that there are a lot of cultural norms that would separate the possibility for that being a universal language to speak in.
Yeah. Yeah,
my ideas as a you know, wealthy American and what I deserve and what others deserve certainly is a lot different than somebody in sub-Saharan Africa or
Right.
So I'm
right, but
to
you're
a,
still a, horrified when you see, you know, crimes or abuse or starvation amongst children in parts of the world.
Absolutely, yeah. I am. But someone who, say, grew up in an environment that they're used to seeing these sorts right. of depravities, I don't see how it would affect them at all.
Right, yeah.
You know, if we start making judgments of people being better than another, and you started off by saying, I feel like I'm a better person than my brother, does that make us a worse person due to the fact that we're judging other people?
And I think that that kind of gets to the point of the conversation here today and why it's worth discussing at all.
All right. Okay. Thanks for coming up. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to a call, Max. Next up on the phone is Tim from Sandwich. Hi, Tim. Thanks for waiting. You're on the Socrates Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Max. I'm actually on my way to go hiking, so I have some things to confess to, but I would like to return to the notion of better and narrow the question, as it were. I'm a former English professor and would like to bring up Thoreau, who thought that one of the higher forms of knowledge was curiosity. No longer an English professor, as they say, I run a baseball program in tiny Sandwich, New Hampshire, which is immaterial. To what I'm about to raise, we have three rules in the program, none of which has anything to do with baseball per se, but the third rule is the most difficult for all of our participants to understand, and it's do your absolute best on and off the field. And I would like to suggest that the notion of better is always tied to a notion, if you will, of self-interest in the roundest sense of that term. So, for instance, when I think of myself, as a human being, as a conscious thinker, if you will, the moment I consider that I have cornered the market on something, say a Shakespearean sonnet or a species of butterfly or a certain mountain peak that I visited hundreds of times, well, that is the moment that I am no longer working towards something that I would call bestness, in the sense of a kind of forward-moving consciousness that in the end wants to be perfectly round, wants to absorb all perspectives, wants to encompass being in some sense. So I think that the notion of better is not a relative notion, but much more powerfully a notion that is constantly in flux and always flexing. So when I work with young baseball players, and we talk about doing your best, your absolute best, as I put it, on and off the field, I might say, well, how did you greet your mother this morning? And that's it's kind of a poetic stance, but I would like to know that that student of the game actually thought about greeting his or her mom in such a way that the greeting would be extraordinarily new and different. Perhaps new and different every single day. And in that sense, that striving toward bestness for me leads almost automatically to the betterment of the world. So to make a final stab here before I head off into the mountains, I would simply say that...
Well, don't hang up, Tim, okay? Because we're going to get Socratic with you.
But when we're I understand, I appreciate that, but when we're talking about better, and again, I would just keep us limited, and I love the Concord High student questions. Students are terrific, and you guys should be commended for your courageousness. But I think that limiting the idea to the notion of better is where we should start as Socratic students. And again, I think that if we limit it to the region of self and we work for a narrow betterment of ourselves every single day, whether we're writing an English paper or whether we're, as I say, greeting mom in the morning, we're inadvertently going to lead ourselves to a better world.
Hmm. Well, this is interesting. So if I could add to what you're saying or perhaps paraphrase, there's a
Absolutely.
Sense in which these norms or judgments of better and worse give meaning to our lives insofar as there's this notion of human perfectibility that is acting as a beacon.
You have caught me, Max, red-handed. Yes. I am a romantic through and through.
Yeah, no, I sympathize with it. It's hard for me to challenge this. But that's one of my problems with moral relativism, is that it deprives our lives of meaning. If there's no better and worse, why should I try harder with to become a better person at any in any.
I agree entirely.
Yeah, so I got to think of way something to challenge you with here. Okay, so let me throw something at you from a religious standpoint, right? So all of us are God's children, or we all have are made in the image of God, or we have a divine spark or an immortal soul. From any religious tradition, there's this notion that all of us have this something special within us as human beings that, that we share equally. Suppose we're to adopt that standpoint for a moment and say there is something remarkable about the human being, a human dignity, a human worth, an intrinsic value. Then what I have trouble figuring out, and I want to throw this in your court, Tim, is how is it then we can become better or worse as human beings if we have this this human dignity, this intrinsic value that can't be deprived, or we can't be deprived of, or it can't be taken away from us. In other words, there clearly is a better and worse in terms of how we act in our lives, but how do we square that with a notion of human dignity at the same time, or equality? That seems to be a fundamental assumption of our democracy.
Well, I take a quick stab at that, yeah, by suggesting religious is a wonderful adjective here, in that I am not a religious person. I will say that as full disclosure.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I have read religiously William James, and mm-hmm, have long been an adherent of someone like John Dewey, and. And the notion of human dignity certainly rings true to someone who has spent his life studying Wordsworth.
Good, yeah.
But my sense, I entirely agree with you about relativism. It is the kind of thing that I used to give Fs for in English class. But I do think that from this idea of being created equal, there is something about dignity in the human being, if you will, that requires of one a certain self-responsibility.
Well, and Tim, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Laura, for having me.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. And on the sports thing, it's interesting, and we won't have time to get into this, but sometimes when someone focuses solely on being better in sports, like in baseball, Tim's field, do you lose being better in terms of an overall person? You know, you obsessively focus on that better in sport to the detriment of how you treat, yeah, other people and your success in school, yeah, or whatever. So, Tim, thank you very much.
Let me just add, Tim, if you have more to say, send me an email on that. We could carry on.
And we have one more person coming up to our microphone here in Studio D. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you. I'm Melissa Nelson. I'm from Concord High School as well. I think if we go back to the Declaration, maybe saying all men are created equal could be viewed as all men deserve equal rights, with men changing from landed white men to, you know, citizens as a whole. But I think if we go back to what was originally said of better as people's core, people's actions, people's skills, athletic ability, I don't believe people can be better at the core. I think people are all the same. But if you view better as making moral or unmoral decisions, I do think that is the same as people's skills, because it is a decision they make.
Okay, let me think here now. So when you're talking about this core, what are you referring to? Or let me put this a different way. You said that all men are created equal in the sense we're all equally deserving of certain rights, rights to life, liberty, property, or the pursuit of happiness, whatever. Why? Like, why are we all equally deserving of those rights? Presumably, it's because there's something about us that makes us equal. And that's this core that you're referring to. What is that?
I think everyone has the capacity to make a decision that could be viewed as good, depending on
you're
viewing it.
I was expecting somebody to mention this earlier in the show, that what makes us special as humans is that we're rational animals, or we're intelligent, we're capable of knowing. Something about our decision-making or thinking capacity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, now that's great. And there's a whole tradition of philosophy to support you. But the question is, what do we do with people whose rational faculty is impaired? Do we want to say they're lesser than as persons?
No, but I think they still maybe deserve the same rights. They obviously deserve the same rights.
Well, now how can they deserve the same rights if you said that precisely that rational faculty, which makes us deserving of those rights?
Well, is it their own fault that they're lacking the rational?
No, nobody said that.
So then should they not be discriminated against?
Of course they shouldn't. That was my point.
Right.
But
I agree, I guess.
So maybe you want to say that they have this capacity like other people do, to exercise their rational faculty, but it's somehow impaired in some way
right,
or other.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so it's the capacity to reason. I'd agree with that.
But if someone has, this came up recently in the Tucson shooting, if someone has severe schizophrenia, okay, that's not their fault. On the other hand, did they have a right to have a gun like you or me?
Gun laws are rough. Yeah, I suppose they should.
You said it's
maybe
not their fault. So.
Maybe perhaps the gun should have been, you know, if you get into gun laws, maybe it should be people who hunt deserve to have guns, etc. And that's maybe more of a flaw in the laws regarding guns than whether or not he has a right. But since, you know, citizens in general have the right to have guns, then yeah, I think he should have had the right to have a gun.
That's a topic for another show.
All right. Well, we will close it out there. Thank you so much for being here. And Max, thank you very much. Next month, our question will be, does beauty matter? Our guest philosopher will be Jennifer Armstrong. But Max, I really appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Laura.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Funding for the Socrates Exchange is made possible in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. If you want to continue this conversation, go to nhpr.org and click on the Socrates Exchange page. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. The producer is Will Roselip. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Carrie Feltner. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer and project director of the Socrates Exchange is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
Expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org. The Exchange celebrates its 15th anniversary season with support from Bank of America, committed to serving New Hampshire's communities.
I'm Laura Kanoy. Every weekday for the past 15 years, The Exchange has been the place you've turned to for thoughtful and in-depth discussions of the issues that matter to you. And every day for the past 15 years, we've turned to you for your thoughts and opinions. It's this healthy exchange of ideas that has kept this show relevant to New Hampshire. Join me for another 15 years of The Exchange, weekdays at 9 a.m. on NHPR.
The Exchange celebrates its 15th anniversary season with support from Bank of America, committed to serving New Hampshire's communities.